Tonight, we continue our newest segment, Pretty Late's Budget Crisis Corner. Then later, we check in with our new friends at the Beercade headquarters. And finally, it's Friday, which means our Chief Geek Officer, Elliot Serrano, is back for another round of What's in the Box and More. Right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Oh, it's Friday night. And you know what, Elliot? I know that you've been here for every single one of our Budget Crisis Corners. And what do you think so far? How's it going? Do you think that we're getting closer to a solution?
Do you want the truth or something that's make everybody feel good?
We'll talk to you at midnight then.
Right.
By the way, please feel free to jump in anytime this time. But
I'm getting more comfortable with this, and hopefully our state reps. Because here's the thing: every time,
and we have a senator,
we have a senator,
a representative,
correct. But just so the senator is aware, every time when we're off air and I start talking, in both cases, the previous two times. The whoever was in the studio would look at me, get really nervous, and then it was I'm trying to forget who was the first weekend.
Representative Anthony, Representative Feigenholz.
Feigenholz even said, "I'm afraid now."
Well, so I don't think either one of our guests will be afraid because we've gotten used to this scenario where we invite one Republican and one Democrat to our show to let us know where they come from, whether it's their background, their philosophy, and their approach to settling this budget crisis. I want to welcome to the show Senator Biss, who is in studio with us, and we have on the line with us Representative Belloc. Representative Belloc, thank you so much. You are our first participant who is on the phone, and I want to thank you. I know that you have an early plain, and I also want to thank Senator Biss for his time. We've decided that you're going to go first, introduce yourself. So welcome to the show. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Representative Belloc. How you doing?
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure which one. Oh, yeah. Thanks so much for having me on, Patty. And it's Patty Belloc, and I represent the 47th District, which is out here in Southeast DuPage County, which is the towns kind of like Western Springs, Hinsdale, Clarendon Hills, Oak Brook, Elmhurst, around in that area. And I've served for over 7 terms in the House. I'm now the first woman deputy minority leader of the House of Representatives. I've also served as the budgeteer of my caucus for the last 6 years. And now I'm serving as a member of the governor's budget committee, which I've been doing for about the last 3 months, working in a smaller bicameral group with both the House and the Senate, both Dems and Republicans, and we're the ones that are trying to come up with a solution, at least now, a stopgap budget and a bridge. We initially worked on a framework for a major budget, but there was no resolution on that between the leaders, and so now we're working on this. I'm considered a fiscal conservative. I'm from out in DuPage County, a lot of business people out here that I represent, but I'm also very active in social services. I'm the minority chair right now of the Human Service Committee and the minority chair of the Human Service Approach Committee. So my focus has been always people with disabilities, seniors, a lot of social services, and healthcare. I led a lot of the healthcare and the Medicaid reform over the last several years. So I've been very busy in all kinds of different work with budgets throughout the last several years. And my philosophy has always been, since I got in government, my discipline was not to vote for taxes. I believe in smaller government and smaller taxes. And at this point, I think the majority of people in Illinois are really tired of the tax and spend your way to prosperity, because it really doesn't end up in prosperity. So we're fighting right now to try to come up with a budget. And I do believe the working group feels that we can come up with one, a stopgap budget, if the leaders will take a look at it. We've had several meetings over the last 3 months, but especially the last couple of weeks.
Thank you so much, Representative. That's Representative Patty Belloc, and she is a Republican guest for tonight, and our Democrat guest for the night is Senator Biss.
Thank you, Patty. In fact, thank you to all the Patties. There's a lot of
yes,
Patties tonight, which is one of the good ways to talk about Illinois politics.
I'm Daniel Biss.
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no.
Go ahead. No, you're on.
Are we still here?
I'm turning my mic
thank
off.
God.
You keep talking.
Very close call. I'm Daniel Biss, still here, by the grace of God. I'm the state senator from the 9th District, which is a northern suburb. So I live in Evanston. My district office is in Skokie, and I represent those two and 9 other communities in that area, Wilmette, Glenview, Northfield, Northbrook, et cetera. I got into politics in a sort of atypical way. When I was an adolescent, really, like any normal 13-year-old, I fell in love with mathematics and decided that I wanted nothing but to be a mathematician when I grew up, and was fortunate enough after graduate school to get a position teaching at the University of Chicago, and figured, you know, this was my dream job. I would never want to do anything else, and that would be that. Began to feel that our state and our country were heading in alarming directions, that I was increasingly feeling a little bit isolated from the great social problems of the world, and that it wasn't as fulfilling as I might have thought to just work on abstract mathematics problems. And so I got involved in political volunteering, some public policy work, and eventually ran for office and first joined the House and served with Patty, in fact, after the 2010 election, and have been in the Senate for some years subsequent to that. So I have the honor and also the painful challenge of chairing the Human Services Committee in the Senate. So for these last 2 years, I've been trying to shepherd sound policy that allows us as a state to care for the people who are most reliant on state services, the disabled, the infirm, the aged, children, victims of domestic abuse, victims of violence, sexual assault, and to do it in an environment where we have no budget at all, where the programs that are most crucial for people who are most reliant upon government are essentially being shut off gradually, and our entire infrastructure to provide these crucial forms of care is being shredded. And so it's been a difficult and painful, but I think important and meaningful experience. And I'm simply trying to move us toward a true sustainable budget that actually funds the priorities that we as a state have, that in fact almost everyone in the state acknowledges having, but not everyone is prepared to properly fund. And that unwillingness that we've had as a state for not just a few years, but for many generations to actually do what it takes to fund the spending that we want to have has brought us to this difficult moment. We have to change that approach, and I'm doing my best to move us in a better and newer direction.
I want to thank both of you for introducing yourselves to our audience, because what I want my audience to know is that these are the men and women that are working their hardest. I know that it comes down to being cynical and saying that our politicians don't have our best interests at heart. And these are the real blood and sweat that is going into trying to get things done. And they really do come from their philosophies, from their backgrounds, and it may differ, but somewhere we have to find common ground. And I invite our listeners to call us, to text us with any of the concerns that you have, the thoughts that you have. And we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment, but give us a call or text at 312-981-7200. We are talking to Representative Patty Balog and Senator Daniel Biss. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and it is our budget crisis corner. We are going to have this every Friday night until we solve our budget crisis. What do you think, Representative Balog? Is it possible? Like, am I going to be doing this in perpetuity?
I hope not, Patty. I really have faith that we're going to try and get something within the next couple of weeks. Just hoping that the leaders will go along with it, because we have to focus in on what we're talking about now with this stopgap budget and the bridge to 2017. And I think if we can focus in on that, and they said that we were going to come away from the talks about revenue, the talks about reforms for the time being, just to get to manage our government to December 31st, to keep our schools open, which is extremely important. We can't let that go on any further. And then, too, as what Senator Biss said, and I totally agree, is one of the most important things that have really been left behind over the last year is to provide the social services to the most vulnerable people we have in Illinois. And that's extremely important, and they have been left behind because the majority of their money comes from grants, and that's from general revenue. And just so that everybody knows that 90% of the budget is being paid out right now, but only because it's court-ordered and federal consent decrees.
Right.
So cannot pay any money out of general revenue funds until you have a budget. It's unconstitutional to do that. A lot of people don't understand the background of that.
Right.
But constitutionally, that's what has to happen. I feel that, especially in our working group anyways, which I think is one of the working groups who has worked the longest and is still working, that all of us in there, and it is the budgeteers.
Right.
So these are the people that deal with the budgets. They are, I think, really committed to coming up with this budget. And we met as of yesterday, and we are down to the, you know, last few items. But I will say that there are going to be some issues, not as much with the human service and the operations, I don't think, as much as the K through 12 budget.
Right.
And then you get into the funding of Chicago Public Schools,
well,
which said the governor.
And well, yes, and the governor mentioned that today on Rokon's show. I wanted to ask Senator Biss. He mentioned that John Cullerton will not pass a budget for schools to be financed without the money for CPS being increased. And the governor said that that would not be fair to the rest of the state. What is your take on that?
I mean, as you can see, I've sort of looked at you and like opened my mouth for a while, but then no sound came out of it because I like, what is he even saying? The,
right.
The, you know, the Senate passed on the last night of session a school aid formula that increases aid for every single school district in the state. You can argue that's good policy or bad policy or something we can afford or can't afford, but you can't pretend that it's just money going to CPS. It's money in above. Over and above what was there for in previous years for every single school district in the state. Now, President Cullerton is strongly committed to doing a few things. Number one, making sure CPS has enough money to open. I don't know. That sounds important to me. Mm-hmm. And number two, improving our school funding system in Illinois, which is the worst in the country. And I applaud President Cullerton for working on that. But the idea that he's the one holding something hostage is just like baffling
well,
and false.
And the other thing the governor said, Representative Ballack and Senator Biss, is that the school money has been mismanaged. So at this point, he's not going to give them more money. So as much as for me, from my point of view, that it's not fair to the rest of the state to fund Chicago, then we're saying it's fair to hold the children who have not had any participation in managing the funding for the city of Chicago public schools.
Yeah, I mean it's just crazy, right, Patty? The Chicago Public School District has done a lot wrong, and unfortunately, probably continues to do so. And everybody should be focusing on ideas to improve it. And by the way, there's a lot of improvement to be done, so there should be a lot of different ideas we could try.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't improve the district by starving it, and you don't help anybody by hurting kids, right? So let's stop making kids the hostages. Let's keep the doors open, keep the school district running, and then work together to improve it. You don't help anything by first killing it.
Right. Well, and Senator Biss and Representative Ballack, both of you do not serve the city of Chicago. You are both in the suburbs. And I heard a lot on that last day, writing up to the deadline, more so than I had heard earlier in the year. And I didn't come as much as I did last year. But I don't remember as much finger pointing at Chicago as I did on that very last day. That Chicago, you know, if you live in Chicago, this is a great bill for you. Or and that was in both. I was in the Senate and I was in the House. And I heard that a lot that day. Representative Ballack, was that something that has been sort of building, or has that been sort of your sense? Because Governor Rauner made a tour that next week, kind of pointing the finger at Mayor Emanuel and the city of Chicago.
Well, I think because, you know, I agree with Senator Biss that the Chicago public school system has been very poorly run over the last several years. We don't want to make the children suffer. But what a lot of people don't realize is that we do give a block grant to the city of Chicago, to the Chicago public schools of, I think it's close to almost $357 million right now already. And so what they're asking for, I think, is closer now to an additional $700 million. And that's when I think the governor is saying, is that fair to all the rest of the taxpayers in the state of Illinois, who a lot of them run their school districts very well, and yet they're not asking for all of Illinois taxpayers to put into that. So it's a problem, and I agree with Senator Biss in the funding formula also. We know we need a fairer funding formula, but at this point in what we're facing right now in the worst fiscal crisis in Illinois, we should have started this discussion, which I will say Senator Menard started way before, and Senator Biss has been a part of that. But right now, as far as getting this budget settled, I don't think that we're going to come up with a new funding formula within the next 3 weeks. And so I think we need to move forward and focus in on a compromise as to what we can do in the K through 12 budget for the entire state of Illinois, which part of the discussion will be the Chicago Public Schools. But that discussion needs to happen now.
All right. And we are going to continue our conversation that we are having right here. Senator Biss, I'll have you respond after we take a break and some news. Sound good?
I look forward to it.
All right. Thank you. Sure. We have Representative Bellock, Patty Bellock, on the line with us. Senator Daniel Biss, yeah. Biss is in the studio. And we encourage our callers to participate. 312-981-7200. I know we've gotten a couple of texts already, and we will take those in just a little bit more in a moment. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And it is our Budget Crisis Corner every Friday until we resolve the budget of Illinois. I don't know, resolve. We have one. Do we have one?
I was going to ask, how do you define resolve?
I don't know. Having a budget, right? Representative Bellock, what would be a resolution? Having a budget, correct?
Yes, my resolution right at this point would be a solve the 16 budget with a stopgap and a bridge to 17 and half a year budget, and also the K-12 funding for the entire year.
There you go. And Senator Biss, you wanted to respond to some of the comments earlier, and as well, I'm guessing that.
I just want to lay down a marker. My prediction is that you will have epistemological challenges around the resolution of when we really have a budget.
Craig, can you please look up epistemological? Thank you. I just want to make sure. Go ahead.
I can wait while he's anyways, you asked what I think was a crazy important question before the break, which was, what is the deal with this pitting of regions against each other? And look, we have to evaluate public policy, and if somebody feels like a given bill should send less money to Chicago and more money to the suburbs and downstate, they should advocate for that cause, and they should fight for what they believe in. The rhetoric that I heard, at least on the Senate floor near the end of the session, wasn't about people advocating for what they believed in. It was about people pitting regions of the state against each other with ugly, ugly, ugly language. And that hurts our state in a serious way. Our state is giant, it's diverse, it's complicated. And in times that we have greater difficulty coming together and seeing ourselves as a single people who are all in this together, and all need to make certain amounts of sacrifice in order to improve the greater good. When we don't see ourselves that way, we can't make good policy. We can't get through these things. And so, yeah, everyone should fight for the policy that they believe in, but you got to stay away from the rhetoric that is finger-pointing, that's ugly, that where I could say to my suburban constituents, oh, it's all the Chicagoans' fault, and the Chicagoans could say to their constituents, oh, it's all the downstaters' fault, and so forth. That ugliness harms our ability to solve problems.
What would you say to that, Representative Bellock?
I agree with, you know, I don't agree with the rhetoric, the strong rhetoric. I guess my point is that, as I said, we do give a big block grant to the city of Chicago right now, to the Chicago Public Schools, of $357 million. If you increase that, which is what they're asking for, already other people throughout the state, and I'm not talking about my district or Senator Biss's district, there are a lot of other poorer districts in southern parts of the state or western parts of the state that will say or are saying, okay, then if you're going to give that to them, why aren't you giving part of that to us? Well, that's where the education funding formula comes in. And I agree that that formula needs to be changed. It needs to be more equal. But at this point, right now, I think what we need to focus on is how we solve the problem of getting through this year with a stopgap budget, and also how we fund K-12 schools. Also, one of the biggest issues right now is university funding, which is in the other bill. And, you know, we have three universities that are extremely in trouble, mm-hmm. and that would be Chicago State, Eastern, and Western. So right now in our budget committee, we're trying to work with how we can help all of those schools, all of the universities, and the math grants, which is an issue that comes up again. That's a different thing because in my area, or maybe Senator Biss's area, he may have, like I have, more private schools, and those young people that are going to those get MAP grants. Now, in the other parts of the state or the city, you have the universities. So that's other funding, and they have MAP grants also. But so those are issues, and that's what we're there for. That's what we're representing the people, and I agree. I mean, I will take a look at Chicago Public Schools. We are giving them $350 million, but the point is, and we care about the kids, so that's where you come to the thing where you have to come to a resolution as to how we're going to do this. But at the same time, this is where you come into reforms, and if you were going to give money to a failing business per se, and you saw that the management was bad, it was not, there were no performance standards or whatever, and you have to take a look at that and say, what are we going to do to have more performance outcomes? And so I think that that plays into the subject that I think people will want to see. It's the same thing with the taxpayers of Illinois. They're fed up. They are fed up with the tax and spending. And so they're saying, if you're going to take, you know, and you're going to talk about revenue in our state, then you better make some changes. And I really feel that when the governor ran, I mean, it wasn't just Republicans that voted for him. It was independents and Democrats who said, we're tired of the status quo and we want to change in the state of Illinois. So all of these issues, you know, come into one another. But, you know, number one is our children and education, all the way K through 12 and our university students. So it's our responsibility as legislators to come to a resolution on this right now and do the best we can right now and come up with a solution and then move on with a better funding formula in the next year. And I think that this, what has happened in the last couple of weeks especially, has raised the issue, as Senator Biss said, as how important this funding formula is. It needs to be fair to all children in the state and all school districts.
Senator Biss, do you think that a temporary budget and a bridge to 2017 is a solution here?
Of course, it's not a solution, but it's better than not doing anything. We have people dying right now. We are throwing the homeless onto the street. We are failing to treat the mentally ill. We are throwing people out of universities, sending them out of state or out of the education system altogether. Of course, we should do something to allow our schools to open, our universities to function, our students to be able to afford tuition and are vulnerable to receive services. But no, is a stopgap a solution? Of course not. We need a comprehensive solution that is balanced and sustainable and will work in the long term.
Well, and that's what I noticed on that last day of a deadline was it seemed to be a lot of showmanship. And I do think, Representative Bellock, I was in the House and in the Senate, and maybe it's because I'm from Chicago. I hear those words more harshly, but there was so much of it that it was hard to distinguish it from the rest of the conversation. But beyond just the language I heard on that last day in regards to legislation and whether or not Chicago was to blame or was going to get more money, or if it was better for Chicago than the rest of the state. There was also this, the temporary budget had been introduced by the governor that day. And my understanding, and you know, he was trying to get that done that day, but my understanding was there had been a temporary budget also introduced the week before. Is that accurate?
Yeah, so what happened was President Cullerton proposed, you know, I think on May 27th or something, he said, hey, you know, look, I hope we get to a sustainable long-term solution, but by the way, the clock is ticking. May 31st is the deadline. It doesn't look like we're clearly on a path to have a big so-called grand bargain. So maybe we should think about a stopgap budget just in case. And Governor Rauner angrily denounced Cullerton to the press and said, how dare he? He's sabotaging the negotiations. It's proof that he's not negotiating in good faith, blah, blah, blah. And then on May 31st, all of a sudden, Rauner, without any warning, said, actually, we should do that after all. Didn't release any legislative language until that evening when it was far too late for anybody to evaluate what was out there. But, you know, putting all the politics aside, if we can't get a big picture agreement, we should do what we can to keep the lights on, the schools open, and the vulnerable served.
And that's what both of you, I think, have agreed.
Absolutely.
That something has to be done. Representative Bellock, one of the things that Governor Rauner, did you want to respond? I don't want to cut you off.
Oh, no. I agree with Senator Biss, really, because I know Senator Cullerton did do that. And I know that the governor did say that. And then I think the governor realized in the end, I mean, where, you know, that it, this was the end of the year and we were no further ahead than what we were a couple months before. And, you know, you're looking at K through 12 schools and kids, you know, the doors opening of the schools in August. And this is something that is right in front of us and something has to be done on it. There is no holding back on that any further. I think that, you just can't hold up the K through 12, and you can't hold up the human services any longer either.
Well, and
you know, I agree with Senator.
And many listeners know. And if you're new to WGN Radio, maybe people are driving around. Maybe you don't even live in the state of Illinois, and you just kind of clicked on this conversation. And I thank you for that because it is important not just to the state of Illinois, but I think this is something that's going on across the country. And how do you manage your funds? How do you make sure that schools stay open? How do you make sure social services are prioritized? I went down to Springfield last year after the the Good Friday Massacre. Is that what it was called? Bloodshed.
Some of us called it that, at least.
Yes, I did, because my son has special needs, and that was the day that funding was cut on World Autism Day, actually, for many social services across the state of Illinois. And once I started going down there, I realized it was important to listen, to see how the process, you know, I mean, it is watching the sausage being made, but the more people participate, the more legislators I met with and realized these are really men and women doing their best. And the more we talk to our legislators, email, call, send letters, the more they know their story, they know what's important to their constituents. I've met so many people, senators and representatives, who said it does make a difference when someone comes to them and tells them their story. They know that they're responsible to someone. So please, ladies and gentlemen who are listening, wherever you live, please be involved. This is part of citizenship. This is part of citizenry. I don't know why I can't say that word. Really, Craig, can we just, I need a speech pathologist to come help me with that
Tony
word.
Tony Preckwinkle says that word impeccably. You should have her train
citizenry.
Nicely done.
You know what? Could you please just record me saying it correctly, and then I can just point at you and never have to say it again?
Citizenry.
There. Yes, you say it very well. Citizenry.
Mm-hmm. Citizenry.
Now I'm still looking up that word, which is separating justified belief from opinion.
Epistemology?
Yeah, that one. Mark that down as the first time that word was ever used on our show. But, you know, I add the humor because there is something to be said about making this. Some people get bored by this. Some people will, I'm sure, have texted Craig and said bye-bye. And that's fine.
Right. And you know when people are getting bored, to bring them back in, you start talking epistemology.
Exactly. Because they wanted to know what it meant as well. But I want to make sure we get to some of our texters. Craig, can we take one of the questions? And I believe it was the first one that came in.
Yeah, our first text this evening came in a little while ago. It said, would our guests in studio support term limits?
Senator Biss?
So actually, one of the very first things that I did after I was elected is I introduced a constitutional amendment that would have put in the Constitution a limit on how long someone can serve as Speaker of the House, Senate President, Minority Leader of either chamber. Because I felt like those are offices where you're elected not by the whole state, just by one district, but then people accrue additional power over time and have a tremendous amount of influence over the whole state that grows with their time in office. And I thought those kind of term limits made a lot of sense. Now, I wasn't successful, but it's something that I've continued to support and will keep on pushing.
Are there other, well, Representative Belloc, what are your thoughts on term limits?
Yes. You know what? I will support it, and I'm sure that that's what the people would want. In a lot of the other states that have done term limits, they feel that sometimes the government bureaucrats tend to run the states then. But I'm, you know, I'll be in full support of it if that's what the people of Illinois want.
And the other thing, the other group, just I think Patty's point is important. The other group that tends to be empowered by term limits, which I'm sure your listeners are going to love, Patty, is lobbyists. Because what happens?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
what happens
absolutely.
Is that the institutional memory is no longer with the legislators because they're cycling in and out like crazy. It's the lobbyists who know how things work, and it empowers them, which is a little bit something to balance, to think about on the other side of the balance.
Well, and Representative Belloc, I don't know if you had a chance to hear the governor today. He was saying just term limits. He was saying that that's one of his two sticking points are now term limits and fair mapping. And those are the two things that so it does sound reasonable if, for the most part, Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate, where you can't accumulate that kind of power. But if people are committed to being public servants, to be honest, the governor, one of the things he did say was if you are serving maybe 10 years is the limit, then you can just run for another office. You don't have just not that seat anymore, was what he had said.
I guess one thing I want to raise, though, one logistical question is the deadline to put constitutional amendments on the ballot has passed. So when he's saying that those are the only things he wants anymore and they're constitutional amendments, is he saying he wants us to do it in time for the 2018 election?
Man, and I wish I'd had...
The logistics of that compromise don't seem totally attainable to me.
We have to figure out a way to get to...
Yeah, but I think the fair map, they moved forward with that, and just the other day they announced that they have the signatures, so I think that is moving forward, isn't it?
Well, the State Board of Election has said that the initiative to put the map amendment on the ballot has enough signatures, and now they're going to be in court to see if it meets the other criteria. But whether or not it succeeds has nothing to do with the legislature, and so if the governor's trying to strike an agreement with the legislature, that's a completely side question, I would think. We have no control over that one way or the other.
Right. We are going to take a break here. We are talking to Representative Patty Belloc and Senator Daniel Biss. This is our Budget Crisis Corner. Every Friday, we are inviting a Republican and a Democrat from our legislature, from our General Assembly, to to talk to us about where they come from in this budget crisis and how we can possibly get to a solution. I'm not going into the tonight. I won't go into any of the blame or as to how we got here. We could talk about mismanagement and corruption, and it really isn't what is going to be important. Although I think a lot of that is on the governor's reform agenda. He has said that he's willing to put most of that aside. We'll talk more about that when we come back on 720 WGN. Is it my turn? Is it my turn again? I forgot. I was having such a great conversation and I forgot. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I am joined, and Elliot Serrano has been listening and taking everything in. And after midnight, we will hear from you, sir, if you don't mind. Because right now the floor is mine, actually, not anybody else's. And then I share it once in a while with Senator Daniel Biss. He is our Democrat for the evening for our Budget Crisis Corner. Representative Patty Bellock is on the line, our Republican for our Budget Crisis Corner. Representative Bellock, I wanted to go back to something that you had mentioned about how the majority of the state of Illinois voted for Governor Rauner to come in and shake things up. Has that been your sense that he's going in that direction? Is it what you had anticipated? Hold on a second. Let me make sure.
That, you know, this is one of the main things that Speaker Madigan disagrees with in the budget process, that he doesn't think reforms come in. But when you talk about budget reforms, and I was just down at the Illinois Chamber luncheon the other day, and all the businessmen were talking about, you know, wanting to keep businesses in Illinois. Well, that's what keeping businesses in Illinois is what grows the budget, you know, and that's what grows jobs, and that's what makes the state better, you know. And that involves reform when you talk about workers' comp, which has been one of the governor's major things. Actually, he mentioned at the time that the attorney general, that's one of her major things, too, is causation and workers' comp. That will help all of us, businesses and everybody in Illinois, to grow the economy in Illinois, which is the number one thing to get us out of this fiscal crisis. So I think that those two things, you know, go hand in hand. And I do believe that people in our area, because I know lots of my friends, their kids are, you know, and some of my friends, you know, Democrats and Republicans, are tired of the unbalanced budgets in Illinois, the fiscal crisis, always crisis management. They said, will you just get us out of this? If there has to be an increase of some kind, how are you going to do that responsibly and assure us that you're not going to come back in another 2 years with another, you know, ask for an income tax increase or something?
Senator Biss?
Well, you know, I think that Representative Bellock is raising a really, really important question here. First of all, does Illinois need reform? Yeah, obviously. We lead the nation in pension debt. We lead the nation in having a bad credit rating and consecutive incarceration of our governors. Of course, we have major problems and they require major reforms. The question is, what should those reforms be? And the suggestion that Governor Rauner was elected on this platform that he is now trying to implement is just nonsense. He ran on a platform of shake up Springfield, bring back Illinois, and by the way, my wife is a Democrat, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. He did not run on a specific policy platform, and now he's trying to advance not a generic reform package, but instead a very specific, radical, ideological agenda. And while he was democratically elected and has a mandate to govern, the other entity that was democratically elected is a Democratic majority in both houses of the legislature. And the kinds of things that Governor Rauner wants to enact are not things that a Democratic legislature has considered anywhere in the country. Anywhere in the country. We have divided government. Divided government is a time to come together and find those small areas of consensus and move forward with them first. And this idea that the philosophy and values of the Democratic Party should just be ignored in crafting a reform agenda, even though Democrats have supermajorities in both the House and the Senate, is silly. As Democrats, we need to lay out our own reform agenda that's consistent with our progressive values and will improve the state of Illinois in a way that we think is appropriate. That's doable. And it's necessary, and that's the best way forward.
Representative Bellock, I want to give you a chance to respond, but I have to take a break, and I will put a pin. I promise to come back. I know she's like I, but more after that. I promise more after this on 720 WGN, of course. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and this is the Budget Crisis Corner. Before the news, we were talking about the mandate that Governor Rauner has assumed as the governor of Illinois, because he did win by a majority, and Senator Daniel Biss had some thoughts about that, as did Representative Belloc, and I wanted to give her the opportunity to respond. Hello, there you are, Representative Belloc.
Yes.
Sorry
yes,
about that.
I definitely wanted to respond to that because I stand by what I said before, that independents, Democrats, and Republicans wanted changes. And I think that, yes, he started out with 46 points in his turnaround and shakeup. But you know what? He is focused in on restoring our state to a good fiscal footing. And the only way we're going to do that, and I think that we can both agree, both Democrats and Republicans, are the six major issues that he has left. Workers' comp. We all agree on that. I think that there needs to be something done about workers' comp. We see our businesses leaving Illinois, not attracting businesses to Illinois. So that's one. Pension reform. We know that. We've been told that by, all the bond houses, just like we were talked about the Medicaid reform, which we did work on and did do. So pension reform is something that we did work on for a year or two. Was turned down by the Supreme Court, but we need to go back at it again. We have the highest unfunded liability, $110 billion of unfunded liability in our pension system. Property taxes. We have the second highest property taxes in the United States. He wants to address those issues. These are all issues that affect everybody in the state of Illinois, especially people that are hardworking taxpayers in Illinois. And I don't think that those things are made up. I think that that is a good platform, especially those six that are left, with the term limits and the fair map. So I think that those are definitely issues that we can address, like we addressed the Medicaid reform a couple of years ago, in a bipartisan way. And we cut $1.6 billion in Medicaid. We did 62 reforms. We spent 4 months working together all the time to do that. And we agreed and disagreed on some of those. We've restored some of those. But the bottom line of that reform was to take off people off Medicaid who were not eligible for that and restore the money to the people who were the most vulnerable who needed that money.
Here's my only issue, Patty. Totally agree that Governor Rauner was elected to fix Illinois, and Illinois needs major reforms. But then you jump right into essentially implying that Democrats and independents voted for him because they were excited about his commitment to a causation standard for workers' compensation. Whoa, that didn't happen at all. He never talked about that. People voted for him just because of a vague sense of things need to be fixed. And you mentioned the six things that he wants. I want six very different things, and I think we're going to reach resolution if everybody's values and principles and priorities are on the table together, if we craft together a reform agenda that's sensitive to everyone's priorities, not only his.
Well, I agree with that, but don't you agree with some of these other issues, like pension reform, procurement reform, property tax issues?
Well, I think there's a lot of value to discuss in there. I think the number one place to go if you want real reform in Illinois that addresses anomalies that have broken our fiscal system from day one, we have this weird principle in Illinois in the Constitution. We're one of only four states in the country whose Constitution says you have to have a flat income tax. That has held us back. It's made us similar to states like Michigan and Pennsylvania that are known for fiscal problems. That's a reform that I think is consistent with my values. Brings Illinois out of being an outlier that does things differently and ineffectively, moves us into the 21st century. I don't hear Governor Rauner proposing that. And that's fine. He and I have different values. But if you want to get me on board, we have to find compromises that reflect both of our values, not just his.
I agree. But I think some of those other issues that I just commented on are issues that people come to me about. Well, I mean, like the pension reform. That is something that we all know has to be addressed again. And I think that the longer we go without addressing it, the higher it goes.
There you go. We have, this has been, honestly, Craig, and maybe it's because we are getting used to navigating these waters of both sides of the conversation. By the way, before I release the Martyr and the Serrano, I do want to make sure we don't ignore.
Oh my God, we're going to release the Martyr and the Serrano.
Serrano.
Oh,
yes.
I just called him the wrong name.
I know. Now you're in trouble.
I know.
Do we have any other texters that we need to address before?
We had a few more texts come in. A couple just now, but we had some earlier this evening as well. Please discuss how the leadership in the two chambers are elected. If Madigan wins his district, will he automatically be elected as speaker again? Someone was just confused.
Yeah, great question. So the way it happens is we elect all the legislators from their own districts, and then the legislators pick the Speaker of the House and the Senate President. And so almost always, whichever party is in the majority, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, will get together and pick one of their own to be the Speaker and the Senate President.
Well, let me ask you. Wait, hold on a second. I'm sorry. I haven't released you
the
yet.
Martyr.
Let me ask you this question, though.
Martyr's been released.
What are the odds of Mike Madigan not being elected Speaker?
I would say they're somewhere between 0 and 0.02%.
Well said. Well said.
There you go.
Representative.
Yeah, there you go. That's very good. That means
Patty,
zero.
We do have more text before the Martyr got out.
Oh, yeah, but Martyr got out.
From the 773, and this is just another kind of curious question. How does one get a referendum posted on a ballot?
This is a great question. So if you want a binding referendum to actually change the Illinois Constitution, there's two approaches. One is by early May, so unfortunately the clock ran out already, a referendum can pass by supermajorities in both houses of the General Assembly. So that means...
Does it have a cape? Does the majority have a cape since it's super? I'm sorry. I've been wanting to ask that question for weeks now.
It has the insignia on the chest, but not a cape, actually. So you need 71 votes in the House, 36 votes in the Senate, and then that puts it on the ballot for the public to vote on in November. The other way to do it is only works for certain subjects, specifically subjects that are about the structure and procedure of the General Assembly itself. And there the citizens have to get hundreds of thousands of signatures, and that then puts the referendum on the ballot. That was the way in which in the early 1980s, the size of the Illinois House was cut from 177 to 118 members. The legislature didn't initiate that. Citizens, actually, Pat Quinn, of all people, led a petition drive to shrink the Illinois House by a factor of a third.
Now we have a few quick reaction texts from the 847. Patty, I love tonight's political guests. Keep on doing this, please. You treat your listeners like we are intelligent and we care. Thank you. From the 708, this Representative Bellick is right on. She should be governor and get Illinois back on track.
Wow.
That's with exclamation points. However, a little bit after it, I apologize, from the 630, sounds like she wants to turn Illinois into Kansas. This is pathetic. From the 708, just turned in. Can you share the name of both speakers? They seem very intelligent. I'm getting a phone call.
Yeah, this has been an excellent conversation.
Well, it's either Kansas or Venezuela. You pick your poison. So.
I don't know what that means, but I'll laugh at it. We have in studio with us Senator Daniel Biss. He represents the 9th District, which includes Evanston, Skokie, and several other northern suburban Cook County suburbs. I've repeated that twice now. We also have Representative Patty Bellock, who is of the 47th District, DuPage County, Naperville, Westmont, and other areas in that general vicinity, correct?
No, not Naperville.
Take off the list.
No, forget you. Oakbrook, that area.
Oh, yeah. Oakbrook, I apologize. Sorry, right. Naperville, you do not have the pleasure of Representative Bellock. Representative Bellock, can you hold, I mean, I know that you have an early flight, but I think that this has been going so well. I do need to release the Martyr and the Serrano. Can you hang on for one more segment?
Sure.
I so appreciate that. More after this on 720. Joining us on the line is Representative Patty Bellock. She represents the 47th District, which is the DuPage County area of Westmont, Oakbrook, their parts. And Representative Bellock, because you're on the line and we have Senator Biss in the studio who represents the 9th District, Evanston, Skokie, northern suburban Cook County, I want to give you the choice. I know it's hard because it's gotten a little crowded in here, Representative Bellock. I have to be honest with you. I know that you have an early flight, but if you ever have the opportunity to come in and join us on a Friday night, what's happening right now is that Headquarters Beercade is in studio. They have brought us food and cocktails. We have a bartender. So I'm just saying you might want to join us next time.
It's kind of like the floor of the house in Springfield. Food and booze and fun.
I'd love to be there with you. Yeah, I'd love to.
So
and I want to
at your
that issue.
Yes.
What I was just going to say, the man with the comment about Kansas, I just wanted to say my dad was a pitcher for the White Sox, so I'm a White Sox fan, not a Kansas guy.
There you go. That's good to know. I'm going to give you the choice. So Rob Martyr he and I actually have a segment called The Weekend Windup because we come from different, I think, political philosophy backgrounds and philosophical backgrounds. And Elliot Serrano and I are more similar, I would say. in some ways. My listeners probably already know that. I don't think I'm giving anything much away. But so we tussle a little bit. But once I started doing the Budget Crisis Corner, both Elliot and Rob were kind of like, I got something to say. I'm going to give you the choice of would you like to hear from Rob Martyr or from Elliot Serrano and see what they have. We're releasing the Martyr and the Serrano right now. You pick.
I guess the Serrano.
The Serrano. Hi, Elliot.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Serrano. You're the Serrano. Yeah. Spicy.
I'm addressing.
Whatever you had on your mind that you wanted to bring up right now.
I actually wanted to address Senator Biss, actually, because I've got to say, for the most part, you speak a good, you speak quite eloquently on different things, and you also you have the vocabulary of a Michael Chabon. So good. Thank you for that. But, dude, okay, so let me ask you this. How is it that the Dems in the House, in the Senate, keep getting their lunch eaten by all the GOP with all these freaking oversimplifications of businesses, government is like business, schools are failing because they're poorly managed and all that, which, I'm sorry, You can't make a parallel between government and business. You can't make a parallel between schools and business because that's just not the way it is. If you want to make every public service a business, one of the most overspending, most financially wasteful programs out there is the freaking U.S. military, but no one ever calls it that. So could you explain to me why the Dems can't get down a narrative that the average person can understand instead of eating up all the stuff that the other side of the aisle keeps putting out?
Well, I do think that, that old Will Rogers line of, I don't belong to any organized political party because I'm a Democrat is still holds, that we as a party, we've got a lot of different people who think a lot of different things and say a lot of different things, don't have a simple, coherent message we can hammer. I think your point about government being run like a business is crazy important, though. It's easy to say we should run government like a business, but actually we set up government to be not like a business in a couple really important ways. And some of those ways have come up tonight, right? So one of those ways is if the Chicago Public School District has problems, it's not a smart investment to continue funding it. Well, in business, that may not be a smart investment, but it's actually the obligation of government to provide public education throughout the state of Illinois. And so we don't have any choice about whether or not to just shut it off because we're mad about the performance. We have to try to fix it while it continues to exist. Another point that I think is, again, very important and gets to the core issues of why this has been such a frustrating experience for Governor Rauner, in my opinion, is that businesses are designed to be fast and nimble. They're autocratic. There's somebody at the top who usually has the authority to make fast decisions that everyone else is required to follow. And that creates efficiency. Government's not like that. And there's a reason government isn't like that, because if government were like that, it could create the possibility of a dictatorship. So we slow government down on purpose. We say we don't want a dictatorship. So we're going to separate powers out. We're going to have to reach consensus before we can move forward. That's going to make things slower. It might make things less efficient. But it's also going to stop us from having a dictator. That's a trade I'm going to take 7 days a week.
Representative Belloc?
Okay, I guess I'd like to address two issues that he brought up. Is in our arena, when we talk about school boards, something very interesting just happened that we voted on. Okay, this year about Chicago schools is whether their school boards should be elected or appointed. And a lot of us were somewhat perplexed on that, because I think it was Mayor Daley that wanted them appointed because he felt that they weren't being run well. But at the same time, in the rest of the state, they're elected, because that way, if your school board, if you're not happy with the way your school system is being run, you take them out. You don't elect them again, and you put somebody else in that you think is going to run the school better. So that issue was, so we voted, to elect them back. And I don't like making a decision over that on the Chicago area. But the bottom line is we in our area in DuPage and a lot of the other, counties around have referendums. We do referendums all the time. Chicago hardly ever does a referendum. So we do things. If we see that we need to do a new school or whatever, we'll do a referendum. It may take three times to see if you can change it. That's an issue that the people are speaking. The taxpayers get a voice in making a change and making something more accountable. It's very frustrating when you're having to fund something that you don't feel you have any voice in the accountability of that. And I think that's the frustration with a lot of people, not just on the issue of Chicago, but on a lot of issues that we're faced with.
Rob Martwick. I'm sorry.
You know what? I've never been called worse.
Rob Martier. Newsman Rob Martier. I'm sorry. I was thinking about next week's schedule.
Look, believe it or not, I do agree with probably about 85 to 90% of what Dan just said. Government is slow. It's a process. They don't call it the sausage factory for nothing. It's the way things get done, of the people, by the people, for the people. We get all of that. But you brought up CPS, though. What is a taxpayer's recourse? When do we get to feel as though we've got skin in the game when an entity like Chicago Public Schools has been so poorly run, so poorly mismanaged, and is basically on the door of just utter collapse? This is what frustrates people in my position, because we feel as though now all of a sudden we're going to be, and I'm in a suburban district, we're going to be throwing all of this money. Again, you know, it's good money after bad. Where's the recourse? At what point in time do you hold those people that have been in charge accountable?
Well, let me start by saying I get what you're saying, but I would be careful about the good money after bad analogy. There are good Chicago public schools, and there are kids who go to CPS schools and get good educations today. It's not as though and there's been some overheated rhetoric coming out of various places, especially the governor recently about this. It's not as though Chicago.
You mean the prisons? They're just.
I was not going to say it, but yeah.
I'll say it.
Thanks for saying it. So let's be careful. The district is problematic. It needs improvement, but it's not as though it's just a useless cesspool. On the contrary, there are good and important things happening there. And the outcomes, by the way, are better now than they were 10 years ago. But nonetheless, it's not good enough. I think we can all agree. What recourse does the taxpayer have? Is the election process. And whether we change it so that it's an elected school board, whether it's right now the mayoral election that results in the appointment of the school board, whether it's when it comes to state policy, your vote for your state representative and state senator, you have a voice. And actually, one of the good things about education policy is that people are so passionate about it, they follow it so closely, that they actually educate themselves and really care about the impact their vote has on schools, as compared to some other more technical issues that are kind of harder to get a read from the electorate using the election outcomes.
Representative Belloc, before we let you go, I want to make sure that you've gotten everything, because I know that you have to go. So I don't want to leave anything on the table for you. Any thoughts on that or anything else that we've discussed in the last hour and a half?
I thought that was a really good point, because I brought that up before, is that number one, our concern is about the children, not just the children of any of the counties out west or north or south, but the Chicago public schools and those children also. But the bottom line, what the other man just brought up is, you know, we feel very frustrated to put in $350 million a year and have no control over performance outcome of that. I'll tell you, I'm a strong supporter, and I don't know, Senator Biss, how he feels about charter schools, because I feel that that's a choice issue that brings about competition in schools. And that there was an editorial in the Tribune just the other day about how the Chicago public schools, their outcomes have risen as far as graduation rates, and they pointed out a lot of the charter schools as competition. Now, other people don't like charter schools, but I can guarantee you the Chicago public school system doesn't like that. The teacher unions don't like that. But I'm for anything that will improve the Chicago public schools, or any schools for that matter, if you have low performing schools, not just in Chicago, but anywhere in the state. And I think competition drives that. It drives competition for teachers, education to become better, just like it does in anything else.
I was looking at Senator Biss and wondering if he wanted to add anything. We have come to the end of our budget crisis corner, and I want to give anyone the opportunity who wants to have a last word before we say goodnight to our legislators and our General Assembly members. Senator Biss?
Well, my last word would be a heartfelt thank you for the chance to be part of this discussion. I'd be honored to come back.
Oh, thank you. And Representative Belloc?
I feel the same way, Patty. Thanks so much. And I always enjoy being with Senator Biss, and I respect all of his opinions. And he is so articulate. I'm honored to be on the program with him and with you.
Well, if we have a chance, then I would invite you both back together whenever we have time.
Yes.
Appreciate that.
And I'll be down there the next time.
How can people contact you, Representative Bellock?
Oh, just call my either office or my email, rep@pbellock.com. Or my district office, 630-772-1617. Or I have a web page. So I'm out there. I'm in Westmont, my district office, and I have an open door policy. Anybody that comes, just come on in.
That's repbellock.com for anyone who wants to email or find out more information about her offices. Senator Biss?
Yeah.
You can call me at 847-568-1250. You can email me at senatorbiss@gmail.com. You can tweet at me at Daniel Biss. Or you can hang out at my website. The website I've been updating most recently is roadbackillinois.com. Roadbackillinois.com.
Thank you so much, Representative Bellock. Please, safe travels, and we look forward to having you in studio.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it, Patty.
My pleasure. And Senator Biss, we'll see what happens next. More after this on 720 WGN.
Did you know that over 98% of adults are afraid of the dentist? You're not alone. If you dread going to the dentist, have difficulty getting numb, can't stand the sound of the drill, or have a strong gag reflex, the professional staff at Dr. Brown's Family Dental Office understand your fears and concerns. Try this out for size. Sleep through it. Dr. Brown's is one of only a few dental offices that offers intravenous sedation. Complete your dental work in one appointment and in a relaxed and comfortable sleep. You won't even remember the sound of the drill. Dr. Brown has over 30 years of expertise with the most advanced and innovative technology and techniques, all to make your appointment more comfortable and pain-free. Call today for a free, no-obligation consultation, 630-796-4220. Dental work is a dream when you snooze through it. Call Dr. Brown, 630-796-4220, or online at drthomasbrown.com. Open evenings and Saturdays, most insurance is accepted, financing available. Dr. Brown's Family Dental Office, drthomasbrown.com.
Are you curious? Are you eager to pursue those interests that excite and inspire you? Well, now you can hold some of the most brilliant teachings of science, history, health, photography, cooking, and more all in the palm of your hand. Open the door to learning everything about anything you choose with the breakthrough video on demand library, The Great Courses Plus. Explore an ever-expanding library of presentations from world-famous experts from your phone, tablet, TV, or laptop. Savor a chef's secrets with the chief instructor of the Culinary Institute of America. Delight in the wonders of the cosmos from famed astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson. Or take to the outdoors with the brilliant photography insights of National Geographic photographer Joel Sartori and many other great courses from leading professors at Harvard, West Point, and more. Whatever your interest, you'll find it in the Great Courses Plus. And now you can enjoy it all free for 30 days. Start your free one-month trial at thegreatcoursesplusradio.com. That's thegreatcoursesplusradio.com.
Listening pretty late. I'm Patty Vasquez. It is time now. Am I in trouble, Greg? They said bottom of the half hour ones. It was okay if I did this, right? We knew it wasn't go long. I mean, like, how do you cut them off?
I think what they said is that the top of the hour ones were the most important.
Most important.
Yes.
Okay, I got that. Got it. Clearly, because here is Rob Martyr.
Crazy Kaplan's fireworks. Seven.
I'm so sorry. Here's Roger Badish with your news.
Are you sure?
Look, it's Monday through Thursday,
I
and
know.
Then you come in on my Fridays.
I'm so sorry.
And there's so much chaos.
There's
a slider right, waiting for me to take more bites of it.
Ooh.
From the headquarters beercade, and our friend Tim has joined us in the studio. Roger, I also need you to come down to the studio at some point, because I brought stuff for you as well.
Oh.
Come eat, come join us.
All right, I'll be down here. After this.